Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of July 4th, Independence Day in the United States. Woohoo! I'm John Gibson. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. You don't sound so excited.
I am. I'm pretty much dancing up and down, you know, singing Yankee Doodle Dandy. Shout out to my niece, Jamie. Happy birthday, Jamie.
All right. Happy birthday, Jamie, and happy birthday to the United States of America. Now, I know there's a lot of stuff going on in the world, but we're just going to concentrate on our podcast this week. And on this week's show, we've got an interview with Jay Jackson of the Hiroshima Carp. We're going to talk about the Carp and the Marines and Fighters and Kuroda's 200 wins and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Well, that was a mouthful.
But I got it out.
You got it out. Well, I'm glad of that.
now it's an earful.
I don't have to go in and get it. Okay. So on Saturday, I went out to Yokohama Stadium and had a nice chat with a couple of the Carp players, including Jay Jackson, middle reliever, first-year middle reliever for the Carp, who just won 11 straight games, which was the first time they'd done that since 1984.
Oh, the Carp won 11 straight games. Sound like you're talking about the Mr. Jackson winning 11 straight games.
No, he's 3-3.
Okay.
In 38 games, so that's a bit of a load. He has 19. Well, this is I have to give a disclaimer.
Uh-oh.
And that these data are from Saturday. Do not include today's. I don't think he pitched because today was a blowout. So he's 3-3 with a 1.79 ERA, has allowed 2 home runs in 40 innings, a nice 52-12 strikeout to walk ratio.
Mm-hmm. He did pitch today. He threw an inning today.
But did he? 22 hits in 40 innings. So that's some pretty good stuff coming out of Mr. Jackson's right arm. I was curious about a couple of things, how he deals with the heat and the fans and the weird stuff that goes on in Japanese baseball. So let's hear what he had to say.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast is middle reliever Jay Jackson of the Hiroshima Carp, of the red-hot Hiroshima Carp. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, it is. It is indeed great to be here. It's a great time to be playing for the Carp now. You guys, so how did that feel being in that 11-game winning streak?
It was great. You know, with our team the way we are and how scrappy we are and how hard we play, I feel like we could do that a couple of times during the year, but hopefully we'll save it for when we get to the playoffs and we'll run off 11 straight in the playoffs where we can get a championship.
11 straight will do it.
11 straight will do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's I like the ambition. So tell me about a little bit. We were talking about the preparation, and you know your role is really settled, which is a great thing. But let me ask, how is your preparation different here in Hiroshima from what you are used to in the States on a game-to-game basis?
It's not too much different. Last year's my first time being a full-time reliever, and I was actually at the back end of a bullpen in Double-A with San Antonio and in the back end of the bullpen in Triple-A with El Paso. So I kind of got a routine. I got to see the guys, how they did it, that have been relievers for a while, and pick their brains and see how they function and see what worked best for me. So coming here, I didn't really change anything. I just wanted to make sure that I got the pitches and got my location locked in. We were ready just to be ready to pitch in a ball game whenever they needed me to.
I talked to a couple of pitchers. A very similar pitcher to you is Scott Matheson of the Giants, and a big guy, throws really hard. And he said he was trying to be a starter this year. So what for you, you've been a starter and you went to a reliever. What was the big adjustment for you to do that?
I think just the routine of getting ready quicker. That was about the only thing for me. But it's never really taken me a long time to get ready. Even when I was a starter, my routine didn't take a long time.
Okay.
But I think it's harder transitioning from the bullpen to the rotation than it is from the rotation to the bullpen, because you can always stretch out and take a lot longer to get ready, but it's harder to get ready quicker.
Okay, now let me ask, so you're not a lifetime reliever coming into these Japanese bullpens. There have to have been some eye-openers going into the daily routine in the Carp bullpen.
Everybody kind of does their own thing, but I think the most interesting thing was, I guess, during spring training, watching all the bullpen guys throw 50, 60, 70-pitch bullpens. That to me was like, I mean, you're either your starter's throwing a 70-pitch bullpen, but I don't see relievers doing it a lot. So that was kind of an odd thing. And when I first got here, and I only threw like 15, 20 pitches in my bullpen. They're like, are you sure that's enough? And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm good. Like, if I throw more than that in a game, then I think we're in trouble. So yeah, I think that was the only really big eye-opening thing. But everybody has their own routine, and everybody does their own thing. And I think everybody's clicking and getting settled into what they need to do.
Okay, now part of the things I've noticed in Japan, used to be the case that more or less all the bullpens, all the pitchers were throwing, all the relievers would be warming up 2-3 times a game. In fact, some teams they almost made it like a requirement.
No, we still have some guys that warm up 2-3 times a game. Like, they'll play catch earlier in the game, and then they'll get ready for when they're supposed to go in the game too. Mm-hmm. But me, like, you can't waste bullets. You can't you can't waste good pitches that and good arm actions that you can have. So I just like to relax, stretch, and then when it's time to go, it's time to go. You get ready. And you don't need those extra pitches because you need those for the game more than I think you need them for in the bullpen.
So as a ball player, you have to be really good at, especially a reliever, and especially a guy at the end of the bullpen. You got to be really good at tuning out all this extraneous stuff. So I guess that was easy to, okay, they're just doing it, I'm going to ignore it.
Yeah. You just kind of stay in your own little zone. And once you get to the point where you know what your role is, you know what you're doing, and you have confidence in what you're doing, it's easier to tune everything out and just focus on your task at hand.
Okay, so you got 38 games now. We're halfway through the season, so we're 76. You know, we're looking at 76 and a lot of work. Is this what you signed on for?
I signed on to help a team win games, and we've had a lot of close games, so that's a good sign. I've got 38 games, but that means we've also been winning a lot of games, and we've had a lot of close games. And so I can't complain about that. As long as we're winning, as long as my arm's still holding up, I'll be out there to help them try to win games. And like I said, the ultimate goal is to win a championship. So if it takes 76 to 80, 85 games to win this championship, I'm all for it.
Yeah, this country's going to go nuts if the Carp win. Yeah. It's been a long time.
Yeah, they said it's the Carp's the longest, the guy has the longest drought of not having a championship, I think.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see.
It will be, and great fans. That's got a bit, you know, I think coming from the minors to Hiroshima had to have been, how was that mentally going into a park and there's 35,000 people every night?
I didn't expect it at first, but everybody told me the Carp fans are really great. And then when I got here and to see the support that we get at home, and then especially to see the support that we get on the road, where some games we have more fans than the home team does, even if it's in the middle of the week or day games. It's unbelievable. Like, our fans are great.
Yeah, it is something special. And I know a lot of people really, that's, I guess, part of the bonus that you don't get with your paycheck when you come to play in Japan. Yeah. Now, I guess the other question I wanted to ask was, how's the bullpen run with Hiroshima? Because everybody does it a little different. You know, do the coaches tell you, or do you have days off? Do they have days when they say, you're not pitching today? You haven't seen one of those
that
yet.
That happens very rarely, but I'll have those days if I pitch 3 games in a row. They'll say, you know, worst case scenario, I'll pitch. But for the most part, we've had a pretty steady, you know, mix of guys to come in. And luckily, with some of the games that we've had, I'll pitch 2 days in a row, and that third day, we'll blow somebody out, or we'll get a ton of runs where I don't have to pitch, or somebody will pick up the slack where the starter will go 8 or go 9. We've had some games where I might have to go 3 days in a row where we pull something out. So it's been nice to have those days off and those games of rest. And it's just, that's how our team's been flowing all year so far. And just looking forward to keeping it up.
So right now, you know, it may be mean to say it, but your arm exhaustion is your arm health is right now due to a little bit of luck.
it's a little bit of luck and a little bit of conditioning, I'd say.
Okay.
I get ready during all season to make sure that I'm able to throw, especially last year's my first time being a full-time reliever and having 60 games and 80 innings last year as a first-time full-time reliever, and just taking that experience and how my body held up through that, and just taking that into the off season, not counting that I went to Winter Ball after the season last year too and got some more work in, and just knowing how my body feels and the conditioning that I need to have to throw 60, 70 games and 80 innings, just knowing how that feels. And you know, my arm feels good right now. It's going through some stages where it's lagged a little bit, but I know what I need to do to make it feel better and to get that extra little oomph I need to get over the hump on those days that, you know, I might not feel up to 100%.
So you said you pitched last year in El Paso and San Antonio, so I guess you haven't really noticed the heat here.
No, I'm from the south anyway, so Hiroshima is actually really good for me because it's humid. I'm used to that. I'm from South Carolina. I live in Tennessee now. So that weather doesn't bother me a little bit. It's just how it changes to that weather, how quick it changed is the only thing that got me. But other than that, the heat's not too bad. I'd say the only other thing would be like the turf fields, how the heat comes up off the turf. But other than that, everything's been good.
Well, I hope everything continues to be good and a good health and good success.
All right, thank you.
Thank you much. Yeah, it's always a pleasure, man. It's good to see you pitching well.
Mr. Jackson, thank you much. Look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, I actually have met Jay. I did say hello to him at one of the parks that I was at. And, I didn't get a lot of time to talk to him, but I introduced myself, told him we had a show, and asked him, one day to be on it. So I have spoken to him. So I don't have to give my old line of, hey, I can't wait to meet you, because I've already met him.
Okay. Well, I met him in the spring and had a nice chat with him and Braden Higgins. We had sort of a three-way conversation there, which was sort of like they were trying to out-positive each other about all the wonderful things that were going on that spring. They were both really excited, and they're both real nice guys. So
newbies.
Yeah.
That's what they all do.
Yeah, they'll learn. They'll learn the hard way. We'll learn them.
We'll help break them in, exactly.
So John, what would you like to comment on?
Well, it was funny. You sent me the interview, and I was listening, and I thought, this guy sounds, his inflection and the way his pronunciation and everything, I could have sworn he was from Texas.
Oh, yeah.
And then he said South Carolina. I was in the midst of looking up where he was from when
in Texas.
Said, no. I was going to look at his history,
You were looking to see where he was from in Texas.
No. And so then he said, South Carolina. I was so shocked. I was like, oh man, I used to be able to pick off all the accents and tell where people were from, and I could just swear because we lived in Texas for a short time. So I thought he was from Texas. And then as far as what he said. I like that, maybe we can win 11 straight in the playoffs and do it. And I thought, dude, if you win the Central League, you only need 7.
True enough.
You only need 7 if you're playing 11.
But 11 will do it. Any way you cut it, 11 will do it.
Right. They don't let you play that much anymore. But, assuming they don't blow their big lead that they have, it's up to 10 games now in the Central League, so it's really looking good for them, but you got to finish it off. I just was surprised that he called the Carp scrappy.
Mm.
And I think that was one of the things that stuck out to me in the short chat. Of course, I just made the joke that he's a newbie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the impression that a lot of guys come over and they get is because to me, when I hear the word scrappy from a guy from the U.S., it means, hey, we don't have a lot of power.
Mm.
We've got to scramble up some offense. And I don't think that's any different from a lot of Japanese teams, especially those in the Central League. They all have to scramble up a little bit of offense because they don't have guys a real deep lineup packed with a lot of power. And especially right now, Brad Eldred being out, they are getting the power. And this team has outscored every other team in Japan. So it's not like they're scrappy. This team is really producing at the plate.
Well, I think scrappy's an attitude as much as a definition of a style of offense. They're not a small ball team. Although they can play small ball, but they're not a small ball team. They're they got a lot of pop, but I think it's the attitude. It's the, they have a lot of fight and so on. I mean, they've got, they've got a couple of extra weapons the other guys don't have, but they don't make them any less scrappy, So I saw yesterday's Carp Bay Stars broadcast that the Carp led Japan in come from behind wins.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that fits. I think I think we have to cut him some
scraps. Cut him some scraps.
Cut him some slack in the scrap heap department.
Hey, Scooby, would you like some scraps? No, I think to me, I think the American definition of scrappy is that team that really, you're right. It doesn't give up. It fights hard. But I think also, within that is, we don't have a lot of guys with power, but, we battle in our at-bats. We try to make the pitcher throw a lot of pitches. That kind of mindset is what came across to me.
That's when you have no choice but to be scrappy.
All right. Well, we're not going to agree on the definition of scrappy, I can see.
No. So let's just throw it all in. Scrap it and move on.
An MVP argument to go with it. And yeah, it just seemed to me that I was listening to a first-year guy talk about what he's been seeing from his team.
I buy that.
Yeah.
I buy that. Because you certainly get, you get that intense preparation bit in Japan that you don't, especially if you're a guy who's coming straight out of AAA, double A, or somewhere like that, where you get, I hear bad things about AAA baseball a lot recently, that a lot of guys are just like, punching the clock, not really taking care of business because eventually they're going to get a job because they're in AAA. And okay, so when you go from that to this, it's like, whoa, Nelly.
Yeah, we're in it for real now. So that really stayed with me. And then also when he talked about, two things he talked about in the preparation. One is, he doesn't need a lot of pitches to get ready. And then the other was when he talked about, I guess it was in training camp, and he only threw 15 to 20 pitches and then said, yeah, I'm good, because if I throw this many in a game, then I think we're in trouble. And I just think I'm glad he gets to stay in his routine. And we often hear about that with the foreign players, that they don't have to do as much as the other guys. And I'm glad they're allowing him to do that, especially with the workload. I talked to Logan Andrasek when I went out to do the Coco Ballantyne interview. And he was really concerned about Jay Jackson, saying they were using him so much that he thought he was going to wear out. And, you talked about it, too, the fact that he hasn't thrown 3 days in a row. But he's been getting a lot of use, and obviously I checked and saw that he threw again today in a game that they were pretty much handily winning, but they had to keep scoring to
hold on to the win. It was like getting close every time they turned around. The Bay Stars were getting a little closer, so I can see that.
Having to take the mound. So those two things kind of stood out, but then the other thing that really, really got me almost laughing was how you tried to convince him or tell him that luck played a major role in the fatigue factor of his arm, something that he said, but you twisted into a different way. And then he said the reason for my success or my the way my arm is my preparation in the off season, not luck.
I was referring, I wasn't trying to twist anything. I was trying to insert something in there and ask a question. I wasn't trying to say that he was unprepared. I was saying that he was in the shape he is because, having done all the preparation, he's been fortunate not to have to pitch a bunch of times on, 3 days in a row because the Carp apparently don't have a plan.
The plan is, hey, we're out of guys, you go in.
yeah. No. I mean, Dennis Sarfati has, he has days off. Now, he works a lot, but he has days where he's not pitching.
He's got scheduled days off.
Exactly. And in Hiroshima, the scheduled day off is, well, you're not going to be the first guy we're going to go to.
But, keep the gun in the holster there. And,
exactly.
And make sure it's cleaned and ready to go. Yeah, I understand that. But, it seemed like you were – he led you that way by saying, fortunately, I haven't had to throw in these situations. And so you took the ball and ran and said luck has played a role in fatigue. And so he stopped you. I mean, I'm not putting words in your mouth and I'm not putting words in his mouth. I'm just reading the situation. So if you can read it
all you like. I mean, I don't quite see where you're coming from, but I'm good.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Those things, those are the things that really stood out to me.
Well, that's what I was trying to get to is that every team does it differently. And I go back to the bit about the bullpens, and I remember Marty Brown told me something in 2010 when I interviewed him, and he said, Koji Aoyama is going to be one of our bullpen guys, and he's got elbow and shoulder histories. And one day in camp, he's throwing 100-something pitches in the bullpen.
You're wondering, okay, well, that's probably why you have some elbow problems.
And you know, basically when he found it out, he said, you know, who's responsible for this? Who okayed this? Was it the pitcher? Was it the battery coach? Was it the bullpen coach? Was it the pitching coach? You know, and, you know, the answer was that essentially nobody was accountable for this. It was just the pitcher felt good and he wanted to keep throwing. And that's okay. But, you know, one of the issues that Japanese baseball has with arm trouble, and perhaps why there's not so many Tommy John surgeries here, is because the guy's arms don't last long enough to have Tommy John surgery. Because in junior high school and high school, these kids are throwing during summer vacation, unsupervised. You know, they're just told to, you know, practice. And all they do is go out and throw, and their bodies aren't ready for it. And, you know, they come back from summer vacation and their arms fall off. This happened to my brother-in-law. It happened to a number of people I've talked to. It's a mad. This is the kind of thing that's happening in pro baseball teams. So it's really weird. I was interested to hear, you know, of course, how often the guys relieve and so on. But I didn't get a clear picture of that. Oh, they're all different. Okay. Everybody tells me they're all different, but the Japanese guys, you know, the Japanese guys will say, I remember Yasuhiko Yabuta when he was with the Marines, when he was part of the last three guys in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, we don't all throw every day all the time. I mean, yeah, like I do, and most of us do. But not always. Not all the time.
Not all of us, yeah.
Trying to make it sound like it was sort of a voluntary kind of feel-good thing instead of a draconian, you know, either you throw or we're not going to use you kind of thing, which is kind of how it sounded.
Yeah, I think guys like Jackson, I mean, that bullpen was a question mark going into the season, and I think guys like Jackson have been a reason why a guy like Yusuke Nomura has a league best 9 wins. Because he hasn't finished a lot of his games. It's been because of the bullpen being very productive and Jay Jackson being a part of that. So he's definitely contributing to this winning thing. I mean, we talked a lot about the offense, but I think the pitching and especially that bullpen and the turnaround in that bullpen is a big reason why the Carp are in first place right now.
Yeah, I think so. I think, people have said, you know, the three big guys, Higgins and Jackson and Nakazaki, have settled into their roles. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about but didn't get in it was the bit about how, you know, you got rest. I said, you know, the last time you got like 2 days rest was the day after you gave up 2 runs. And he said that, yeah, the team didn't quite get it when he gave up 2 runs. They thought, oh, maybe we have to change your role.
Something's wrong with you.
Exactly. We think you're broken. we want to check the guarantee and see if we can get our money back.
All right, well, let's talk about the Carp now. They mm-hmm. are obviously running away right now with the with the Central League. Mm-hmm. They had an 11 game winning streak, as you mentioned early on. That was their longest since 1984, and they went 16-6-1 in June. What was the other team that went 16-6-1 in June, do you know?
I have no clue. I might guess it was the Lotte Marines.
It was the Hawks.
It was the Hawks. Okay.
It was the Hawks.
And oh, I guess. Yeah, I guess that makes sense because that was interleague, which they won. So.
Right. But the Carp were right there with them, and you know those teams had a really good series in interleague. But you know, I said when we did the Central League preview, I said this team had it all last year, should have won, and I said, blah blah blah. I'm picking them again. And so one of the reasons I picked them to win the Central League was because I liked their defense up the middle. I liked the shortstop and the second baseman, obviously, but I liked it in the infield. I'm sorry, in the outfield. I liked their arms out there and all that stuff. But, you know, they're basically just bashing the ball right now. And so even though they had this 11-game winning streak, and I went through the winning streak and I noticed that they doubled up opponents in scoring. So they were 53-25 in runs scored during their winning streak. But it wasn't all-out domination. They barely got by in a lot of games. Only six of their starting pitchers won any of those games. And they only hit 10 home runs during that time. So it wasn't like there was total domination. And they did it without Brad Eldred, because he's been injured and deactivated for a while. And Hiroki Kuroda, whom we'll talk about later on, he hasn't been out on the mound. He had to take a break. I think it was just an old man's break they needed to give him. They said it was an injury, but I think he just needed some time off. So anyway, they did it without those two guys. I mean, they're doing it without all the, as Mr. Jackson liked to refer to, all the bullets in mm-hmm. the gun. You know, they're just good.
Yeah. Now, I've got a story coming out Wednesday, I suspect, about the Carp after I talked to a few people. I talked to Takahiro Arai, asked him basically what's the difference between this year and last year. Same question for Kosuke Tanaka. Same question for Seiya Suzuki. And Arai said that last year, Maru and Kikuchi at the top of the order basically never got it going until it was too late. Mm. And the team kind of like got into a, well, if they're not doing it, I'm not doing it. They kind of went on strike. And he said, this year they've just been like, been scrambling. They turned things around and everybody else has sort of picked it up in small increments. And I did notice that last year that those two just really rolled off the table. I mean, I know in our preview show, Patrick said that Eldred really had a drop in performance, but he really didn't. He performed. He missed more games, and he missed a lot of games in 2014, and he missed more of them in 2015 with an injury. But in terms of his performance per game, it was right up there. It was really good.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at a number of things, and Arai said also, in addition to that, he said Tanaka's much steadier. He said Jackson and Hagen have been a wonderful influence in the middle of the bullpen. Everybody's just sort of pulling together. He said also, interestingly enough, he said Kuroda made some adjustments. He said last year was surprisingly a learning experience for him coming back to Japan.
Definitely. He'd have to relearn some stuff and then learn about the new guys.
Right, and he had made some adjustments that made things a little more efficient for him this year, things that were frustrating him last year. And, guys like Yusuke Nomura stepping up and some of the young guys stepping up. So he said it was kind of an across-the-board thing. He also mentioned Seiya Suzuki, his performance. So it's kind of a broad-based thing. I mean, they lost Hector Luna, and it looked like, oh man, that's gonna hurt. And then Abe comes up and does a great job at third base, and they were, these guys couldn't even spell Luna anymore.
Yeah, they're like, oh, who's that guy? And then, then Eldred goes down, so they're like, oh,
the guy was playing third base for us.
Bring back that Luna guy. Now we remember his name because Eldred is injured.
And he was, and spoke to Hector, and he says, yeah, he's fine. He saw, plenty of Yamaguchi Prefecture in the minors.
Right. Well, that streak obviously really allowed them to gain some separation in the CL, and obviously they handled the PO pretty well in interleague play. So, yeah, I like what I'm seeing from them, but they still have a long way to go. And, we've seen a team blow a lead in the Central League, and we've seen the Giants come back. And, I keep saying it, and I mean it, these teams aren't that far apart. I mean, I know 10 games sounds really comfortable and cozy, but we just got to the halfway point. So if the team can get out to a 10 game lead by the halfway point, it can certainly lose it by the end. So it's possible, but I don't see it happening. The Carp look really good.
And here's the other thing is that, and I've said this before, that a 10 game winning streak is a serious mark of quality.
Yeah,
and in the U.S. winning 10 games means, nine times out of 100, you win 10 games, you're going to be a really good team. In Japan, we'll have teams that will win 10 games sometimes and finish below 500. And so it's not as quite as good an indicator.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has to do with playing in a, you know, playing against five teams in your league. And if one of them's really bad, you know, you can run off three wins in a heartbeat sometimes.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that this was a quality 11 game winning streak. I mean, it started against the PL. And then they carried it over back into league play, and then, and this is a good team, and I think that's why it won 11 in a row. So
yeah, I think so.
Okay, all right. Well, let's talk about the Pacific League now, and talk about the Marines and the Fighters and SoftBank and the and the playoff challenge that lies ahead. I think you know, we talked about earlier in a show how this league is basically separated like water and oil really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We got two good teams, one elite team. And then three teams that, you know, we don't know exactly what's going on.
Indeed.
A lot of change, a lot of turnover in those other three teams. But, you know, I originally put this down in the notes because the Marines were doing so well. And I wanted to talk about maybe what a playoff matchup between, you know, in the second stage of the Climax series in the PL, what a second stage matchup would be like between the Marines and the Hawks. And then all of a sudden, as the week went on, the Fighters just, you know, they stopped losing. They forgot how to do that, and they went into Fukuoka. And it was interesting because the Marines went to Fukuoka and played three, and you know, they won that first game and then couldn't manage to get past the Hawks in the next two games. And then the Fighters went in, and they won all three. And it was the first time the Hawks have been swept in a series since September of 2015, so almost a year. And a three-game series, that is. And it was pretty impressive by the Fighters. So I guess, you know, now we've got to talk about what's what lies ahead for these teams as they move toward the playoffs.
Well, speaking, you know, as we were talking about the Carp and their 11-game win streak, the Fighters ran off their 10th win today.
Yeah, in very impressive Shohei Ohtani fashion.
Who is that? You know, who is that guy? I feel it's becoming every week. It's like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. It's like, who is that guy? So anyway, to back to the Fighters and the Marines. Yeah, the Marines, I still like the Marines. I think their basic numbers are better than the Fighters.
I do too.
And but, you know, I look at these two teams now and I really can't say which is going to, you know, I'm more interested in see who's going to finish second than third. I mean, I'm not focusing on not really thinking about SoftBank, and that gap is not enormous anymore.
Yes and yes and no. Yeah, I think you're right. I think the fight for second place is going to be really, really tight and interesting. But I do think that the gap still is out there because these teams are going to have to beat each other to get to that, to try to get over each other, and I don't think that's possible.
Well, yes and no.
So while the Hawks are fattening up on the likes of the Buffaloes and the Eagles, which they have all season.
Fair enough. I'm not certain. There's a couple of questions I have. You know, I look at these teams and how well they're doing, and I think a lot of – and I'm going to go back and use – I think I'm going to throw the Carp and the Marines and the Fighters together as, you know, in these second-tier quality teams we've seen so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really want to you think they're really good. These guys are really good. And I'm sort of curious. The Carp haven't been this strong in the first half in forever. And I see all this improvement. I see all this change. But I also see, as I said, you know, I mentioned in, when we were talking about talking with Jay Jackson, is I see a sort of lack of planning. And I have to wonder if that's going to come back and bite them in the second half when these teams with better plans, you know, start making up ground when they get tired. I don't see the Carp as a team that's ready for the second half. And I like Ogata. People, all the beat writers were telling me last year he's uptight. He doesn't like the media. He doesn't like power hitters. He doesn't like this. He doesn't like that.
This is the Carp skipper
Koichi Ogata. And when I spoke to him, I was kind of going, geez, if that's what he's like, maybe I don't want to talk to him. I'd be nervous talking to him. When I did talk to him, he was open. He was positive. This is what I want to do. This is what we're trying to do. I got good vibes from that. And the Carp guys are all saying that's the way it is. He's positive. Things are being worked out better. He apparently took last year as a sign that I have a lot to learn. Okay, now let's take that and move to the Pacific League. We've got Stomu Ito. He's been here for ages. He knows what he's about. He knows the guys he's got. He's been managing the Marines for a long time. I trust him. I trust the fighters and the Marines more to keep this going because they've done it. They've been there before. I think these teams are going to have some gas in this. You know, they'll have some gas in the second half. And I also like the fighters. This weekend was kind of, we've seen it coming. And I think the first thing was moving Takanashi from middle relief to the starting rotation.
And he pitched a gem. Yeah.
He's pitching one after another.
Yeah.
He's got great stuff. He's got great command. He's like going, oh, starting, you know, that's where I go out and I pitch longer and I get, you know, I put up scoreless innings for longer than I did before. Okay, I can do that. Mm-hmm. And the Kohei Arihara, who's been very steady all year, comes out. Oh, Hawks, no problem. Shutout. Second time the Hawks have been shut out this year. So that was, I think that, well, of course, that was an eye opener probably for the Hawks as well. Oh, we gotta get our act together. I think they've been kind of messing around a little bit.
Well, you know, and I think you yelled at me last year when I said complacency could be an issue with them, and I haven't mentioned it this year, but obviously when they get out to a big lead, they ran off a big long streak and had a really strong stretch, obviously going through interleague, winning that. I didn't mention it, but it was a concern of mine, but I still don't think I think they just got beaten in this case.
I think they did.
I don't think it was anything about complacency, but
no.
I like your aspect or your thoughts there about the long-term aspects of these teams, but I kind of see the same things going. You said Stomu Ito has been around and he's been managing, what is it? He's in his...
Jesus. Well, he's been managing Lotte now for what? 5 years, 6 years?
Yeah, and he's obviously...
He managed Cebu for 5 or 6 years, so yeah.
Yeah, he knows his way around a team and how to get it going, and that's part of the reason why that team is probably has straightened itself out and has become more consistent. And also, catcher Tatsuhiro Tamura last year, that was an issue. They couldn't find a guy who they liked enough to catch and who could swing enough and hit enough to make enough contact and then could play the defensive side, and this guy really has stepped up, and I think he's a big reason why that team has become more steady.
Yep.
And that's a tribute to Ito, to a former catcher. So I just look at the talent, though. I think that, you know, I'm looking at, if I were to put these teams in a playoff situation right now and match them up, I'd have to go with the Marines over the Fighters. Again, and then another thing that I think would push them, if, you know, let's say they have to play the Hawks in the second stage, I think, and I don't know how they're doing it because I didn't predict that these guys would be as useful as they've been, but I'd have to believe that they have the rotation or the arms to get through that first part of the playoff series and then come back and challenge the Hawks in that second stage, because whether you need two games to get through or three, I think they still have a deeper pitching staff. And I'm stumbling as I say that because I didn't believe it at the beginning of the season. But let's say Wakui and Standridge and I guess whoever is going to be in that third slot, I guess it would be Ishikawa would be in the third slot. If they get through that first
then who pitches
series,
next?
Then they're in trouble. I don't know who it is. It could be these young kids, Kota Futaki, it could be Ryota Sekiya, it could be either one of those guys, and I don't think they're that great. They just have, those two guys have really good control, a little bit of deception, and they just hit their spots. They don't even throw all that hard. I don't know. Yuki Karakawa, I don't think it's going to be him.
Nope.
Could it be our friend Takuya Furuya?
Old Might shoelace? As well. Might as well be,
I don't
considering
know, but
where else they got to go.
But at least they have guys they can put out there. I don't even know who would start those games for the Fighters. I mean, if they got through with Ohtani and Arihara in the first two games, maybe Luis Mendoza takes the third game.
Sure.
Yoshikawa.
Takanashi.
Takanashi. Right now it's Takanashi, but what's he going to be after another half season of this?
True. Well, see, the thing with Takanashi is that basically, while everybody's seen him, and I'll agree with that, we don't know, because everybody's seen him as a reliever. Nobody's seen him as a starter except, you know, the couple of teams he's faced.
Right.
So, and you have to think, any team that thinks that Yuki Saito should ever be given a start.
The handkerchief zombie.
Hashtag.
Whatever. You have to wonder, you know, at what point, like, who's making that decision? You know, like, having said that, he has gotten incrementally better. Every year he's pitched a little less, you know, his games have been a little less terrifying. You know, zombies will do that too. Scare the bejesus out of you the first time you see him, but you know, you get used to him. You live with him, I guess.
I just know he's going to be on the next season of Walking Dead. I just know it.
Okay. But you know, I was thinking of a story about the Marines, thinking of calling it the Law of Averages. I was talking with Koichi Hori a week ago, and he said, you know, our team.
He's a coach.
He's a batting coach. He's a former star infielder.
Yeah. Batting coach with the Marines.
Yes, and you know, we're a team essentially, he said, without all stars. and you look at them, and it's, you know, I know some people were upset that there weren't any Marines on the all-star team, but that's because they're a team without MVP candidates. If the Marines win first place, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be people are going to be scratching their heads. Who's the MVP? There ain't one.
Well, maybe by the time we get to the end of the season, somebody has put up a lot of numbers in that respect, and they can be
obvious. Yeah. Well, then they won't matter what's obvious. They'll pick somebody who's.
Well, they'll just pick.
They'll pick Waku because he's got the most wins. Exactly. Oh yeah, well he's the MVP.
Yeah. Right. The guy who works once a week.
Exactly, or somebody who doesn't field his position because he's got the most home runs on the team. So it's a hard slog with that team. Their defense is okay. You know, Navarro's not a great second baseman. Suzuki's not a great shortstop. We've talked about this. Yeah, they're not really great at anything.
But they're just good at winning.
They're good at winning. Oh yes, I keep forgetting that they're good at winning. Well, what they are is. I'll be a little more precise than that. They don't have any weaknesses. You know, they're everybody on the line in the lineup produces. They've got a very, you know, and I've talked about this before. In fact, in the last couple of years, I've said the Marines are like extremely average. You know, they're above average. They're like they're Lake Wobe, the Lake Wobegon team. Every child is above average. Well, that's the Marines. You can win that way if you have 18 guys who are above average, but the world doesn't normally work that way. Well, in Chiba, it does.
Yeah. You know, when I asked you what team you thought was 16-6-1 in June, and you said the Marines, that's no surprise because that whole impression of what they did in Interleague and everything, I think it sticks with you, and it seems like they did, but they
were. Now you're doing psychology on me, man. You should get you need another degree, dude.
Well, they went 14-9 in June, so they weren't bad, but it was the fighters who were 15-7 were a little bit better in June, and it just seems that way because the Marines, they compete really well. You know, they're in games, they don't get blown out, they come back.
Yep.
They score a lot of runs. I mean, it's just, and they, like I said, they put some really good at bats on you. It's not like you can just go through and say, well, we're going to get these guys out and then we're going to, you know, we're going to go up and we're going to score some runs in the next inning. It just doesn't work that way.
They do. And I think that is a good point because I think that's one of the differences with the Fighters. The Fighters tend to be, I mean, when you've got, face it, as much as I loved Nishikawa when he was a minor leaguer and a young player showing what his raw talent can do, the guy's not the brightest bulb in the chandelier. And he's, you know, he's sort of typical of the Fighters. They've got a mixed bag. They've got Sho Nakata as one of their team leaders. Another, no pejoratives, but he's, you know, he's not, he's inconsistent. He's a tremendous talent, but he's inconsistent in his approach. He'll have, you know, when he's locked in, he has these tremendous fierce at bats, and then the next at bat, you know, he'll, you know, who make out on the first pitch on a pitch he couldn't be swinging at. He'll be shaking his head, walking back to the dugout. Was I the one who just did that?
And he had an awful series in Fukuoka, but he had some swings, he had some pitches, and he had some at bats where he actually made some contact and got a hit. But then, you know, it just seemed like it was more luck than anything else. And then
you don't see that with the Marines, but you know, you've got Nishikawa and Nakata. So you know, that team has these weak spots. It's sort of like individual little islands that are there. Young Daikon's another guy who's up and down, really good, really bad. So that to me is the fighter's weakness. Great talent, but not always great approaches. The Marines are more of a team that sort of like does, I mean, their defense not so much, but their batting, they do a lot of the little things, more of the little things right.
Yeah, I just thought it would be interesting to take a look at those two teams, because obviously it looks like one of them is going to be challenging the Hawks, who look like they're going to win the Pacific League. So one of them is going to be challenging them in that second stage down in Fukuoka, looking to pull off the big upset and get to the Japan series. And, you know, obviously when we get to that time, we will look at them. We'll probably be looking at them in a different light, because if the Fighters are going to be that team, I think somebody's going to have to emerge on the mound and help out the other two. And if, you know, as we're talking about the reigning rookie of the year in Arihara, but I think he might get that second game, and then, you know, the third game, we have to see how that goes and who that is and if they can get through. I don't like their chances. I don't like what I'm seeing.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that won 10 games, you know. And well, I guess the thing in Japan with 10 games, it means you've gone through the rotation once.
Yeah. Oh, just about, right? Yeah, you haven't even gone through everybody, so.
And it probably means that Yoshikawa didn't make two of those starts.
Thank goodness. Okay, let's talk about Hiroki Kuroda and his 200th win, and that would be combined in NPB and MLB when that comes. He's at 199 for his career. Now, I think I like what he has done. Obviously, he was a respected pitcher when he was here. He just didn't win a lot of games because he was with a bad team.
Yes.
In Hiroshima for a long time.
And yeah, he was vastly better than his numbers.
Yeah, yeah, it was shameful what he had to go through before. Now the team is good, and it's helping him out more. Yeah, it's helping him out a little bit more. But hey, things even out, right?
He didn't get four years. He didn't get any run support when he played for Hiroshima. And then this is the thing, because people went, oh, they're a good offensive team. No, they're a lousy offensive team who played in a great home run park. He didn't get any offensive support for the Carp. Then he went to Los Angeles, and I'm not going to say anything about the Dodgers. And I mean, I don't think he actually ever had six runs scored behind him until he went to the Yankees. And then it stopped as quickly as it started. So his career has been really hard. And so I just tons of credit for him. And, you know, I would like to go up to him one day before a game and say, lighten up, buddy. But I think he'd smack me.
I was going to say, he'd just smack you across the face and say, get out of my face with that stuff. This is work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. His career ERA, I think, in Japan is 3.5, a little bit more than 3.5. I mean, not great, not Hall of Fame worthy, but I think when you go to the States.
Oh, yeah.
The ERA.
Yeah.
If you just look at the ERA, the numbers the numbers tell a different story, obviously. And
yeah.
What was
he pitched most of his career in Shimin-Kyujo.
Yeah, Hiroshima Shimin-Kyujo or stadium was basically.
It was a bandbox.
It was a hitter's park. So I you look at the ERA and it doesn't impress you, but the overall numbers, he has been great. And I actually think when you go to the States as a pitcher and you win a bunch of games over there, that those games somehow should count more, and really, because you're boosting national pride. He went to the Dodgers, he went to the Yankees. It wasn't like he played on some team in the middle of nowhere. There was a lot of pressure on both sides, you know, on both of those teams to win. It's not like they just throw anybody out there. And he won a big playoff game for the Dodgers when he was with them. So Yeah, I just think that that's going to count for more, and I think he ends up getting into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I think it's not really a question of whether he's deserving. I think he's more than deserving, and it's otherwise I think anybody who questions that really needs to really think about what he did before he left.
Yeah.
And the perceptions of the parks they play in, because he had, I have to look it up somewhere, but his road ERA when he was with the Carp was like 1.9 something, you know, in an era when they were using juiced balls at Tokyo Dome and juiced balls everywhere. It was amazing. He was incredible.
All right. Okay. So he toiled with non-contending teams and.
Yeah, with teams that couldn't score runs to save their life.
But we'll be watching when he gets to that. He'll have his first opportunity this upcoming week, and hopefully he gets to it, and we can talk about that next week a little bit more. Now, we've got some notes. The first note is the crash and burn of the review collision rule, or the new collision rule.
Okay.
Now, I suspected this was going to be a mess when we discussed it in the off season, and it has been a lot worse than I thought. So as far as the last story I read, which I think I read something on Friday, said that the 12 teams and the league are going to convene on Monday, July 4th in Japan and have a discussion about what has been going on with the rule. And I don't know that they're going to have an exchange of opinions. Now, I don't know if they're going to make changes mid-season to the rule or not.
That's the plan.
But that's a possibility, which which I really disagree with.
I've had everybody basically telling me this is something they have to do now.
And, you know, we've seen a lot of trouble with this collision situation at home plate. They're trying to avoid injury, blah, blah, blah. But they misapplied or botched some of the calls, I think. And some of the teams have filed grievances. They've sent in written opinions to the league. They're disgruntled. It seems like nobody's happy. We've got rules. We've got games being decided by overturned calls. We've got games being decided because of bad calls. It's just a mess. So they're going to talk about it. But I don't think I'm comfortable with them changing the way the rules applied mid-season, because now we've already got these games in the books, and we've got games that have been decided already, like for example the Hiroshima game. They can't go back and change it. But now are guys going to play the game a little bit differently because the application of the rule is going to be different?
Yes, and the answer is everybody wants it changed. Everybody wants it to be less ambiguous.
I don't know if they're going to get that.
I don't think so either. And I have questions with the way they're doing it. I think this is a lowest common denominator solution. We were planning to fix it in the off season, but everybody is panicking. So let's do something. So basically what the something is, if there's no actual collision, there's no rule. Now, here's the thing. There's no enforcement. Basically, the runner is obliged not to run into the catcher.
Right.
The catcher is obliged to stay out of the runner's way.
Right this way, sir.
Okay. And and basically, if they both do that, then the call is the call. If there's a collision, then they will probably look at it and see, now whose fault was this? Okay. But that's basically the way it's going to go.
Okay. I'll be keeping my eye on that this week, and hopefully I won't be pulling any of my hair out. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, John has hair. He just doesn't like to show it.
All right. Now it's time for the Shohei Ohtani number of the week.
Yes, I know. What is the number of the week for you, Mr.
I don't know. I was going to go with the fact that he has thrown 30 consecutive scoreless innings, but I like the fact that
I think the number with show. Can I interject?
Go ahead.
I think my number would be one.
Singular sensation.
You go. You could be a chorus line all on your own, John Gibson. I'll even just sing that puppy.
That was a chorus line.
Well, it was indeed. Well, I'm glad you didn't do another one.
Go ahead.
My favorite song from that routine, from that musical. So the one, as in his first home run as a pitcher.
Uh-huh. And
as the first hitter in the lineup.
Yep.
Something we haven't seen apparently since 1971.
Wow.
And first pitch of the game.
So far you got three ones. That's three.
Yeah, that's about as far as I can take it. I'm not going to add up the individual digits on his uniform or the fact that he hit 100 miles an hour today, but all those are good.
Yeah. I think I was going to stick with the 30 consecutive scoreless innings, but I think it's the fact that he has won seven consecutive decisions. I think I'm going to go with that.
Even better.
Yeah.
Seven consecutive starts.
Yeah. Or was it starts? I just know
he's 8-4. He won one in the middle of that, and then he came back and he's won seven starts in a row.
So
Mock-coon on us.
Awesome. And Tetsuto Yamada of the Yakult Swallows. I just have one comment. Just post him tomorrow, please.
Yeah, I have to. I was telling myself this morning, get on the horn to Akinori Iwamura, his senpai with the Yakult Swallows, and nudge this guy. Tell him he's good enough to play in the majors. Tell him to find an agent. Tell him to start talking to the Swallows and say, you know, he hits 50 home runs. He's got to go.
Yeah, there's just I mean the pitch sequence, which wasn't very much the other day. I think he hit the home run off of Ryosuke Miyaguni of the Giants. It's just ridiculous. And he's not missing pitch. He's not learning anything. I this is what I tweeted out. He's not learning anything. He's not going to get better. I think NPB has taught him all. He's going to be able to learn.
Well, he's going
to
get better, but what's the point? You know, this is, you know, he's in the area right now. He's approaching Hiromitsu Ochiai territory, where he can get, you know, the effort it's going to take him to be 10% better when he's so far ahead of the rest of the field is incredible. He's got to go to the majors where this, you know, he's got some real growth potential.
Yeah. And I did see a Dodgers scout the other day at Tokyo Dome, and I was trying to stick an elbow in his ribs and say, hey, man, the time is now. Do it. Get him. So we'll see if I have any pull with those guys. All right, your monthly entertainers.
Well, we have the...
You don't like my new name for it? I thought that was great. Cause
well, I was smiling.
Okay. Our great monthly performers for the Central League.
Yeah, we have, okay, the winners of the Hitter of the Month award are, oddly enough, the second catcher of the year. And I have to go back. I mean, this is going to happen because... Tatsuhiro Tamura of the Lotte Marines, the aforementioned catcher and star, hit 400.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yep, jackpot.
Got the magic number. Yeah.
Exactly, the magic number. If he hit 398, then the better hitter would have won.
Hashtag.
But because he didn't hit 400, the guy who hit 368 with a bunch of home runs, his teammate, Alfredo Despeña, would have won. Because, of course, they don't care that it's a catcher hitting 400 and a DH hitting 398 because they were all born equal in the batter's box.
That's right.
Okay. So that's our Pacific League Hitter of the Month. And in the Central League, I don't know, that guy for the Swallows, what was his name? Yamada?
Future Dodger is what I'm calling him.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I'm saying Joe Panic, find a new place to play. Okay. So Tetsuto Yamada, just again.
Okay.
The pitchers, Shohei Ohtani's got an ERA about, I don't know what.
Should be about zero.
So no, like amoeba sized.
Half one, yeah.
Yeah. And now the big question for me is the Central League starting pitcher of the month.
And I'm going to go with entertainers, man.
Okay. Well... I'm stuck between Yudai Ono of the Chunichi Dragons, 3-1 with a 0.84 ERA. Shohei Ohtani's ERA was not zero or microscopic even. It was 0.29.
Mm.
Yeah, kind of a bummer there. Going to throw a shutout, which always counts quite a bit. Now the other guy who is a candidate is Yusuke Nomura of the Hiroshima Carp, 4-0 with a 1.44 ERA. So we've got 3-1, 0.84, 4-0, 1.44. I'm gonna go with the 4-0, but the 3-0, the 3-1, 0-0 through a shutout, which counts. Seem to get extra credit for that. So I think 0-0 is gonna get that one.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one, it actually came a while back now. It came from T-Ray at the Hanshin Tiger, and he says, what's your take on the drawn-in outfields with two outs late in close games? Sound defensive strategy? Risky? Dumb? Hashtag high heat. Go ahead, Jim. I know you want
that. Well, I don't see that too much, except I saw it today. I saw that today in the Marlins-Braves game.
Uh-huh. Well, you don't see it that much in the majors.
And Ichiro, you know, with two outs and a runner on second, they had the outfield pulled in.
They didn't think he could actually hit the ball hard to start.
Well, he hit it about as hard as he usually did. He just split center and right, and that was a triple. So it didn't cost him much. You know, that was the only run they gave up. But anyway, what do I think about it? Well, Not much. I don't really care.
Yeah, I can feel that. Yeah, something tells me this stems from the Takahiro Arai two-run triple in the eighth inning, and this is on a June 24th game versus the Carp. Versus the Tigers.
Yeah, yes, I think that's the magic word.
Versus the Tigers, and they ended up winning the game 4-2, and the game was close, and I think that was a two-run triple that broke up a tie. So I don't know if they would have gotten to that ball if they were at normal depth. I kind of questioned it myself, but I've long been venting about this crazy tactic. I think it was Tatsunori Hata of the Giants, the former skipper of the Giants. He used to do this all the time, and it used to drive me nuts. And I'm like, you know, if you just stand back, if you give up the run, you know, it's less damage than if you let two runs score. So, you know, I've seen him do it with two outs. I've seen him do it with fewer than two outs. I would only do this late in a game when the game's on the line. If it were the last inning and
when one run is
and
all
one
you
run's
care
gonna
about.
It was going to kill me. And I have my best pitcher on the mound, too. My best reliever, my best starter, whoever it is. I'm not doing it with just anybody on the mound. I mean, yeah, I have more of a problem with the Tigers sending Kyuji Fujikawa out to the mound in these leverage situations. I think that's more risky, but he's been doing okay. I mean, they've been getting away with it, but
well, Fujikawa, I think he's such a charming guy. I think they figure everyone will just be laughing. I mean, only paying attention to what he's talking, you know, he's throwing, you know, he'll crack a joke out there or something, and while they're laughing, he'll sneak a fastball past him.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you only see these things when the team loses and when, you know, it just stands out more, because the Tigers did the same thing on Saturday in the game against the Dragons, and I think it was Ricardo Nanita who hit a ball, a two-out single to right. He hit it pretty firmly, and it got out to right field quickly, and the runner wasn't able to score. I think it was Ryosuke Hirata wasn't able to score the tying run in the eighth inning. And that's because the outfield was playing in. And, I mean, we see there's more questions about when to play the infield in and when to play the infield halfway and back. And I think there's more questions about that. I don't think it's the outfield that's costing teams games. It might backfire on you once in a while, but it's not the worst thing to do. I think it's the infield, them not guarding the line sometimes late in games, playing in the infield in the first and second innings that really drive me nuts. The outfield, I got over it, I guess. Maybe you guys can too. So the next question is from Max, and Max is from Los Angeles, and he sent an email. It says, how common are trades during the MPB season? Is there a trade deadline? Do the rosters expand for the last month of the season or for the playoffs? So I'll go first on this one. to answer your questions in order, how common are trades? I would say they're very uncommon. Maybe we get about, and you never get really big name trades.
No.
Especially in the during the season. You'll get maybe 5 or 6 transactions per year. Is that?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Maybe. And for me, I think Jim and I, we've talked about this on the show before, and I think you and I have different philosophies about it. Mine is that most Japanese companies, it used to be a long time ago, the Japanese company was a lifetime commitment on both sides. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were an employee, you would be the employee forever. And in recent decades, I think that's changing. We have a lot more people changing jobs in Japan, so that's a changing thing. But that aspect with baseball isn't so much of hasn't been impacted as much, let's say. And so I just don't think Japanese companies are looking to give workers away. And it's really hard to find a trading partner. There are only 11 other teams to deal with, and you know, 5 of them are in the same league. And if you really are trading a player with value, you don't want to trade him to somebody in your league if you can avoid it. And it just, you have so few teams, so few partners. I think it's just really difficult to find a dance partner who's willing to give you what you want for somebody you don't want. So that's my opinion.
I think that's pretty accurate. I think once the season starts, they're pretty rare. Most of the trades you'll see are when a team is desperate, you know, they have a lot of injuries and somebody feels compassionate toward them. Okay, you know, we've got this guy, you know, just give us some, you know, we'll help you out basically kind of thing and remember us in the future. What you do see trades in Japan, and occasionally you'll see big trades. You know, you'll see a blockbuster now and then. I think the last blockbuster we had was Yoshio Itoi, being traded to the Oryx Buffaloes for Keiji Obiki and the pitcher.
Right.
So the blockbusters are pretty rare, but. The most of these guys are minor leaguers, fringe players, former good players. You don't see big players traded during the season. The deadline is it used to be June 30th. Now it's July 31st.
And there's no expansion of the rosters like we have in the major leagues in September. So there's none of that.
Yeah, because the minor league, you do that in America because the minor league season is over. And here the minor league season, it just sort of goes on and on and on.
Right. All right. So that's all of them. Thank you very much for the questions, guys. Anyone else who has a question, send it by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #highheat@JBWpodcast, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a message there. Enjoy your baseball.
Talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.